Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Penscast Mailbag here at the Skating Penguin Network. I am your host, Garrett Behanna. As always, alongside me is the fellow contributing writer over at Pensburg.com, co-host of the Penscast Mailbag, just about everything we do here at the Skating Penguin Network. It's Robbie Noggle, as well as the fellow co-host of just about everything we do here at the Skating Penguin Network, Snail, as well. Earlier this week, Snail and I were breaking down the ramifications of the massive Erik Karlsson trade and where that leaves the Penguins going forward. And because the Penguins really made the blockbuster deal of the summer, landing the prized fish in the pond with Erik Karlsson, it's no surprise that this week we have a jam-packed 23 or 22 question mailbag. It's well over 20 questions this week. So let's not waste any more time and get into it. Robbie will get question number one. Snail will get question number two. I will take question number three. And we will rotate back and forth in that order until we are done. Question number one comes from the always reliable Brian. And again, this goes to Robbie. Is there one move or lack thereof that upsets you more than the other during the Ron Hextall regime? Losing two players instead of one in Brandon Tanev and Jared McCann in the expansion draft and not trading for a guy your coach said he wanted in Jacob Chychrun are the two that really stand out to Brian.
Brian makes some good points there, especially with the Brandon Tanev. You were going to lose somebody in that expansion draft, but the Tanev-McCann combination, losing them for essentially nothing is obviously very frustrating. I'll get to the Chychrun thing in a second, but I think at the end, it was more just the apathy of that front office that put me to the breaking point of my fandom in those last few months and weeks of the Ron Hextall area. I think it was more just there was nothing, like there was, it seemed like nobody cared. Nothing was done to meaningfully improve the team at any point that during that season when we knew things weren't right, even at the trade deadline. not only, I mean, was it a bad trade to bring in Mikael Granlund? It was just, it made the team actively worse on the ice. And it was just an overall apathy, a directionlessness that kind of just upset me more than any trade, basically. The Chychrun trade at the time was frustrating, especially when we found out that one, Mike Sullivan wanted him, two, the price was not that expensive. But in retrospect, was it a blessing in disguise? I mean, does Erik Karlsson happen if that trade is made back at the deadline? I don't know, and we'll never know. It'll always be one of them things we can talk about, and what if here, what if there. But I don't know if that trade gets made at if that trade gets made, I don't know if the Karlsson trade gets made. And I'm going to look at the bright side of everything and say that the Karlsson trade will work out better than Chychrun. The Chychrun's younger, cheaper, but I mean, again, I didn't get it. I wasn't able to do the Karlsson breakdown with you guys on Monday, but I mean, I think overall the Penguins obviously were the best team coming out of that deal. So, so maybe thank you, Ron Hextall, for not making the Chychrun trade, so Kyle Dubas could come in and get Erik Karlsson. But going back to the overall question, I think what upset me more than anything toward the end was just the general apathy and seeming unwillingness to do anything or even try anything to improve a team that badly needed any kind of jolt of energy. Question number two, again, from Brian, and this one's going to Snail. What do you think the team does now that we know Jake Guentzel will be out until about the end of October? Long-term injury reserve is an option, but that will have cap implications when he is ready to return to the lineup.
Personally, I think that they're just going to fill this short-term need internally. I think we're going to get maybe a look at DOC up in the top six. Dubas, I wouldn't be super shocked if Dubas went out and got, like Garrett and I had kind of touched on the last podcast, maybe a Josh Bailey or a Thomas Tatar, maybe try to sign them to a low risk contract and kind of help fill that void. But I firmly believe that they're just going to fill it internally until Jake gets back, because it's supposed to only be like five games or something like that. Let's see, question three here from Brian. I want to personally apologize for asking about ice cream last week. Feels like I almost broke up the crew. Ice cream questions are off limits from now on. Also, I'm a condiment dictator. My kid loves ketchup because of her mom and hot sauce because of me. So we have, we always have a variety.
I knew Brian was a dictator. Uh-huh. I mean, I could get it just from the tone of the questions he was asking every week in the mailbag. It just oozed the dictator just coming out of the questions. I mean, I have no problem admitting this. Last night, I had a nightmare last night. And I'm not just saying this because I'm in front of a microphone talking about this week. I had a nightmare last night. The nightmare had nothing to do with ketchup flavored ice cream, but the fact that I had a nightmare last night, I think it was Brian's fault. And I think me just mentally preparing for the recording today, I think it was all Brian's fault. Just going back to last week and the last couple of weeks with these ice cream questions and ketchup flavored nonsense that I'm still not over, and perhaps I'm now losing sleep over it. So don't think, Brian, that your apology gets you out of the woods just yet, because now you're on my watch list. Now I have to watch you even closer with the questions that you submit to make sure that A, your dictatorness, if that's even a word, comes through in these questions, and two, we get any more demented ketchup-related or ice cream-related questions in the future. So I have my eye on you, Brian. If you didn't think I had my eye on you already, well, now it's been magnified up to 10, if not 20. Question number four, unfortunately, no, I'm just kidding. It does come from Brian. What is the craziest superstition, Robbie, that you have ever heard a player having? Ovechkin drinking Pepsi on the bench is pretty legendary.
Well, if you remember back to the days when the Penguins were featured on the pre Winter Classic show, which I cannot remember what the exact title of it. It was on HBO. Crosby eats the same. He eats PB&J before every game at the arena, or home or away. That's, I mean, again, Crosby's a giant weirdo too when it comes to superstitions and art, and that goes for most hockey players. I know that Corey Perry has a pretty intense pregame routine that gets down to the way he tapes his stick, the way he does just every little movement in his pregame routine is extremely borderline psychotic. When you put it into perspective, but the Crosby eating the PB&J, there's literally, I mean, it usually boils down to like the way they tape their stick, what skate goes on first, how they put their jersey on. But there's all stuff that I'm sure these hockey players do throughout the day that that is completely weird. And it's not just hockey either. Baseball players are notorious for little superstitions, off from their walk-up song to how they put on their batting gloves, to a whole bunch of different stuff. What's on their helmet, what's on their glove, a bunch of weird stuff like that. So the list is very long when it comes to weird athlete superstitions. But again, when you're in a routine like that and you've been doing this for basically your entire life, I'm sure that you would become superstitious too. So there's a ton of them out there. The Crosby and the peanut butter and jelly one is one that's definitely legendary in Pittsburgh.
What about Sid's jockstrap?
Yeah, that's just kind of, I mean, the fact that that thing's lasted like,
that's disgusting,
20 plus years is probably, I want to know like what that's engineered with, like titanium or something. But yeah, I mean, that's, give yeah, it- I was, yeah, it's just, yeah, that's more that, I mean, that's just more of a hygiene issue.
Give props to Dana Heinze for managing that, having to manage that thing like day in and day out for like, you the better part
put
of
like a hazmat suit on. What's going to happen to it when he retires? Like, I mean, going to go to the Hall of Fame probably.
Oh, it's going in the rafters for sure.
Oh yeah, that's going to go right next to his jersey. Yeah, that I might just put that on the statue.
Just hang it when the statue gets erected and they have that ceremony. Just what the last piece, just hang the jock strap from the top of it. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like a star on top of a Christmas tree.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. All right. Question number five. We got Brian here again. Do you think it's the right move for Kyle Dubas to handle the general manager duties? I tend to think so. And it's not like he couldn't revisit the search again at the end of next season. There could be a bunch of new intriguing candidates.
So, yeah, I'm totally cool with this. I think this is the right move. I think Dubas is coming in, and I think he needs to have his like pulse on this team for a year before he tries to find someone else to kind of be the general manager. I think it's great that he's just going to be really involved with, he's going to be the man in charge right now. And maybe at some point, who knows what he will after this year, what I don't like, could you guys see this going another year? Maybe, I don't know, but I think it's the right move, and I have all the faith in him right now. I just think we got to keep letting him cook, let him have this year. I would say even give him another year. And then I'm sure when the time is right, he will pick somebody. Could it be Spezza? Who knows? So yeah, I agree. I think that this is the right move for the time being. I'm curious, what do you guys think? Do you guys think it's weird that he's kind of hired himself as GM, or are you happy with this?
I don't have a problem with it, because I mean, he was acting as the general manager from the time he basically stepped foot in Pittsburgh, and anyone he hires, you know, even if it is Spezza, if he names Spezza as the general manager, which I don't think he will, I think Spezza is still rather inexperienced. But that, you know, that could be something Spets is trying to get long term. But even if he brings someone in externally, he's still going to report to Dubas. I think Dubas is going to be the one to sign off on just about every decision as president of hockey ops. So it's going to be somebody, if Dubas doesn't maintain the title himself, it's going to be someone, not necessarily a yes man, but someone who shares that vision and openly and actively, you know, carries the same values for hockey in 2023 as Dubas does.
It's weird. Like, yeah, you kind of, I remember when at the end of Dubas's tenure in Toronto, there was like rumblings coming out that, you know, he wanted more autonomy in making making decisions regarding the roster. And I think he was getting kind of tired of answering to Shanny. And he wasn't allowed to touch the core four. And ironically, here in Pittsburgh, he's kind of got the same situation. He can't really touch, you know, I don't think he has the autonomy to make a move regarding Sid, Gino, Letang. So it's ironically kind of a similar situation. But I think it was just answering to Shanny. Like, now he is essentially he's Dubas, and he's also got Shanny's role right now. So I'm happy for him. I'm happy with what he's doing in Pittsburgh. So ultimately, I think this is the right move for the time being. Question six here from Brian. What player would you rather have, the newly acquired EK65, or if Sully got his guy at the deadline last season, being Chychrun?
Having Jacob Chychrun would be interesting because I believe he is a left-handed shot instead of, yeah, he is a left-handed shot. Also, but like comparing the two, Jacob Chychrun is a very competent top pairing defenseman and deservedly so, but he's no Erik Karlsson. I mean, he's still a good driver of play, and he definitely puts up numbers from the back end offensively, but I mean, Erik Karlsson is Erik Karlsson for a reason, and he's been that way for over a decade now since he came into the league in 2009-2010. So I don't think Mike Sullivan would have had a problem, you know, having another asset like there, like Jacob Chychrun on the back end to complement Chris Letang or whatever. But I mean, kind of like how Robbie was saying earlier, it's almost a good thing that Ron Hextall didn't go get Chychrun. So now, because I feel like Erik Karlsson, and this may not even be a hot take just based on reputation and statistics alone, Erik Karlsson is better than Jacob Chychrun. So the fact that we didn't go after Chychrun and Hextall's apprehensiveness to want to make that big splashy move paid off in a weird way in the long run, because now we have Erik Karlsson, who even at 33 and not 26, because if there's one difference between the two players, it is that Chychrun is younger, which would be an asset better, you know, for the longer term vision or whatever. But the fact that you only have two or three, maybe 4 years left of this core, even with Karlsson being 33, all of it kind of in a weird way worked its way out in the end. And the Penguins still end up in a better spot than they were. They're still better than even if they would have had Chychrun instead of Karlsson, because Karlsson is that much better. So in a weird way, having Karlsson, even after what we had to go through to get to that endpoint, is much better. And it's just weird how that whole thing kind of played out. And now we do end up with Karlsson. Question number seven from Brian, going back to Robbie here. What movie or movie franchise has the best soundtrack? For Brian's money, the American Pie franchise has a strong case to be top tier.
Now, I guess the question here is, does the soundtrack, are we talking songs, or can it be like, I mean,
orchestra?
I mean, you have to put, I mean, your Star Wars has to be.
That's on, what I was thinking. I mean,
that's the first thing. When I was reading the question originally, I thought that was going to be what he said. Then American Pie, like, really kind of threw me off there for a loop. And I mean, you have to put, if you're counting orchestra, just normal, like, classical music,
I don't want to interrupt you, Robbie. Yeah. It just came to my head. Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump soundtrack.
Unreal. Gump, yeah, very good. Yeah, I mean, you have the 70s, the 60s, 70s, 80s music all in there. Star Wars is obviously legendary. I don't know if you guys are Marvel fans, but I think the Guardians of the Galaxy movies have to be in that conversation as well. They use a lot of the kind of American Pie, or not American Pie, Forrest Gump formula, oldie tracks for their soundtracks. But if we're, I mean, is there anything more legendary than a Star Wars soundtrack when it comes to movies? Nope. I think you'd be hard pressed to really come up with one that well, not only legendary, but a good listen as well. I mean, and just so, I mean, everything about, especially the OGs that are so familiar, and I mean, everybody knows at the very least the theme. Everybody, when that comes on, you can probably guess Star Wars, and then the Imperial Death March, I guarantee you, is right up there as well. But I if for my money, I think it'd have to be Star Wars as the best and easily the most recognizable, at least of the last 50 years. No, Forrest Gump was a very good one as well, because it's a very, very good total soundtrack, because they do throw some bangers on throughout that entire movie. Question number 8, sticking with Brian here. What is the best international hockey roster ever?
So I'm really glad that I like double checked this, because when I was reading this originally, I was like, oh, that's so easy. It was the Team Canada junior roster from 2005. And although there were 9 players from that roster that went on to win a Stanley Cup, I did a little bit more digging, and I think it's up for a debate. I'd be curious if you guys have like opposing opinions, feel free to chime in. But I'm thinking it's between, like, it's got to be maybe the 2010 Canadian men's Olympics team. Let me just list off some of these names here. Jonathan Toews, Jerome Ginla, Sid, Danny Heatley, Ryan Getzlaff, Shea Weber, Dan Boyle, legend, Eric Staal, Duncan Keith, Corey Perry, Patrick Marleau, Rick Nash, Mike Richards, Chris Pronger, Brendan Morrow, Scott Niedermeyer, Joe Thornton, Drew Doughty, Patrice Bergeron, Brent Seabrook, Martin Brodeur, Roberto Luongo, and Flower. That's pretty stacked. I mean, I don't know. Does it get any better than that? There's probably some boomer out there that would disagree wholeheartedly, but just with, I think, our generation, everybody here on this podcast, I mean, that has to be the slam dunk for the best international hockey roster ever. Would it not be?
I think you got to look at 2002, the Canadian team that won that gold medal. I mean, you had Ed Belfour, Rob Blake, Marty Brodeur, Theo Fleury, Adam Foote, Simon Gagné. Ginla was on that team as well. Cujo, Jovanovski, Korea. Mario was on that team. Lindros, McInnes, Niedermeyer, Neuendijk, Owen Nolan, Chris Pronger, Joe Sakic, Shanahan, and Yzerman. I mean, I named probably like maybe 12 Hall of Famers, 10 or 12 Hall of Famers right there. I believe let me look back a second here, see if I can find, that's not right, hold on one second, I'm trying to find the, I think, oh, that's not right either, I can't, I'm trying to find the roster for the 98 Canadian team, because it was just as, just a stacked. It did have like Mario and stuff, but I believe Gretzky was on that team. The 2010, I mean, anytime Canada ices a team like an Olympic team with their full complement of participants, they're going to be right up there with greatest rosters ever. I mean, there's going to be plenty of Hall of Famers. So, I mean, the 2010 team, the 2002 team, both going to be tough to argue with in terms of just insane talent.
Yeah, 2010, 2002. I think it has to be either of those. I think sometimes I hear people talking about, like, there was a year, like a Canada Cup. Anyways, I don't know enough about it to really go into it. So I would say take a look at those rosters, and just by the names involved, you could get a good idea that, I mean, these teams were beyond stacked. Let's see here. Question number 10. Obviously, we have to see how it plays out, but where do you rank this trade in Penguins history? Based on what came in and what went out, it could be top 5. And I assume he's talking about the Erik Karlsson trade.
Yes. I think I mentioned on the breakdown episode we did earlier this week, I haven't really felt this way about a trade since the Kessel trade in 2015. That's And I don't mean to say that as like a hyperbole and put too much over exaggeration on it, but that's how big of a player Erik Karlsson is in terms of magnitude. Like when Kessel got out of Toronto and came to Pittsburgh to be in that top six, either with Malkin or Crosby, I mean, that was like a dream come true because Kessel had already proven himself as an elite goal scorer in Toronto. So having that alongside one of the two best centers to ever play the game in Crosby or Malkin, I feel the same way. That's how elite Erik Karlsson is. Top five, it's only a couple of days old at this point. You could make the argument, I'm not trying to do that at this point, but you could definitely make the argument that it's the biggest trade in franchise history, just based on what Erik Karlsson has accomplished with the multiple Norris trophies, the All-Stars, the 100 points from a defenseman on a terrible San Jose Sharks team last season. I mean, there's many different ways you can look at it, and you could definitely make the argument, and I would not fault you if you said this was the biggest trade in franchise history. But it's definitely absolutely up there with the Kessel trade, in my opinion, or as two of the top five, the Karlsson trade being one of the top five biggest trades in franchise history.
I'm sorry, I flubbed that one, guys. I read a question ahead. I got.
Did you? Oh, yeah, you did.
I skipped nine. I'm sorry.
I was about to go into question 11. Yeah, that's okay. All right, we'll go back to Brian, and we'll just give this one to Robbie, and then we'll get back in order with question 11. For this trade, meaning the Karlsson trade, to happen during Sid's birthday, Jesse Marshall's birthday, who is a friend of the pod and a wonderful writer for the Athletic Pittsburgh chapter, and Brian's birthday week, which his birthday will be August 10th, the day that this podcast goes live, is something extra special. Also, the last time we had a player wear 65 for the Penguins, which I believe was Ron Hainsey, we won the Stanley Cup. So, Robbie, all of the stars are aligning here, given all of these massive birthdays that are happening, and it clearly means that the Penguins are winning the Cup next season.
Yeah, I mean, why even play? I mean, let's just get it over with and add some name on there, and we should be good to go. I think that it's quite a birthday present for Sid, obviously. I mean, not that that's why. It just happened. It was also – Sunday was also 65 days until the regular season starts as well. So it all kind of came together at the perfect time. It was just, yeah, kind of a confluence of coincidences there for the Karlsson trade. But I mean, great birthday present for Jesse, great birthday present for Sid. I'm sure Sid was thrilled. I know he is friends with Karlsson. They've had plenty of great moments going against each other. And then Brian, I mean, that's quite a nice early birthday gift that you got to enjoy. So enjoy that, and let's hope that it all works out when all the action starts in a couple weeks. Okay, so where are we at now? We're at question then 11. This is back again, Brian. Again, how do you feel about the front office that's been brought in?
Aside from Vuki Poefu, I honestly don't know a lot about him, but the general buzz I saw on Twitter was like pretty positive, and that's kind of where I get a lot of my news, unfortunately. I did a little research on him, so I can't really speak too much to that, but like I said, the general buzz was pretty positive. I like that Trevor Daley and Amanda Kessel have been kind of, they've gotten more of a prominent role within the organization. Amanda and Trevor Daley both getting they're kind of like special assistants to the GM and Spezza and Dubas, and Spezza getting brought in. I mean, honestly, I never really even thought about it when he first got brought in, and then the Karlsson rumors happening, but like they played together in Ottawa, and I wonder if that him being here had any, you know, it could be insignificant that Spezza is here, but I wonder if that played a role in Karlsson maybe feeling comfortable about jumping over to Pitt. Altogether, I don't have any complaints, that's for sure. And the way that this offseason has gone, I mean, again, not a lot to complain about. So I'm generally very happy with everything that's gone on, and I trust their process. All right, question number 12 from Brian. How do you see Sully and company coaching Erik Karlsson? Surely you don't want to take away what's special about his skill set, but I imagine they don't want him to play like a fourth forward out there.
So not to completely copy The Athletic, but just the day we're recording this was the same day that I happened to read that Josh Yeohyi had something of a feature piece. He went up to Massachusetts to talk with Mike Sullivan, and he talked about this very subject, coaching Erik Karlsson. And the good thing is for Brian and for us who are going to be watching Karlsson on a regular basis is that Sullivan was very adamant, very open about saying, we're not going to put Karlsson in a box and have him be a player that he's not. He's not going to become a defensive master while he's in Pittsburgh. They're going to highlight his strengths and have him play with his instincts the way he's been playing for over a decade now. And that's not to say that there won't be structure to his game, because I'm sure Sullivan will try and the rest of the coaching staff will try to ensure that, you know, Karlsson will be as responsible as he can be in his own end, being a defenseman by trade instead of a forward. But at the same time, you know, when you're trading for Erik Karlsson, you're not trading for defensive prowess. You're not trading to have a shutdown blue liner. You're trading for someone to help in that transition game, to move the puck into the offensive zone, to handle the puck from the point in the offensive zone, to get the puck on net from the point. So you're trading for Erik Karlsson knowing that that skill set is predominantly based on offense. And Mike Sullivan is a smart enough coach to realize the strengths of his players, to not put his elite players, his superstars, in a box and make them something that they aren't or aren't comfortable being. So that's why, another reason why I'm so excited to watch Erik Karlsson. Because we have a coaching staff that is not incompetent. Yeah, I don't agree with some of the personnel decisions that Mike Sullivan made last season, icing players like Jeff Carter and a bunch of bottom sixers in the late stages of meaningful games and like in overtime and whatever. But I'm not going to cry over spilled milk at this point. I'm going to look towards the future and be super excited about what Erik Karlsson can bring to this team, knowing that the coaching staff has his back and they have the backs of the other elite players on this roster. Question number 13. We go back to Robbie here. This question comes from Brian. Do you like the current division and conference names, or do you prefer the Wales with the Adams and the Patrick divisions comprising the East and the Norris Smythe and the Norris and Smythe divisions in the West comprising of the Campbell conference?
Yeah, I'm a traditionalist and I kind of grew up now. It was kind of like early-ish on from my like living memory that when the switch was made to East and West, but I would not be, I mean, you still have the Prince of Wales trophies and the Campbell Bowl that go to the respective conference champions. I would not be anti going back to those names for, or maybe, I mean, I don't know what you would change them to, but going back to a more traditional naming style for divisions / conferences, East and West. Again, it's pretty simple why it's like that, but it just, it's kind of boring after a while. It just gets kind of stale. So I wouldn't mind. I mean, I'm a traditionalist that way. So I'd love to see them go back and rename the conferences to a more, add some history to the naming conventions for these conferences or divisions. I've always been a fan of, at least in baseball, the American League and the National League, AFC and NFC. Kind of as well. Now in the NBA, you have the Eastern and Western Conference, but I would not be anti them switching up the conference or division names. I feel like especially the division names are just so incredibly boring. The Central Division, the Pacific, I mean, that just, to me, that's just boring. The Metro Division, which was kind of a meme when it first was announced, and I guess it's kind of, you're used to it now, but no, even if they want to modernize the names to maybe something like a Gordie Howe division or a Maurice Richard division, something like that. But all in all, I think that I would be totally for them switching back to a more traditional naming style for the league. Brian here with question number 14. Do you think the NHL would ever modernize some of its awards? Speaking of changing the names, for example, changing the Selke to the Bergeron Trophy, Vezina to the Hasek Trophy, or having a trophy for best offensive and best defensive defenseman separately. Any specific trophies you'd like to see updated or added?
So yeah, I think that they will eventually modernize or change these names. When, I don't really know, but I just think that there's these new generations of young hockey fans coming in, and I just think for the NHL, it's in their best interest to modernize these names. I think especially with like Bergeron retiring recently. I mean, what a better name for the Selke than the Bergeron. I think that's a lock. I think that also another thing is like the offensive defenseman award and like the defensive defenseman, an award for point producers and then an award for a defenseman who actually stops goals from happening. I would really like to see that implemented. Maybe have one called like the Coffee Award for points, and then a defensive defenseman. You could call it like the Lidstrom or the Pronger or the Stevens or the Niedermeyer or something like that. So yeah, I think they should, and I think that they will. And as far, I would like to see the defensive defenseman award become a thing, because like Erik Karlsson won the Norris last year. He had 101 points, but he was on a team that didn't make the playoffs and was in the Bedard sweepstakes. It would be cool to recognize defensemen who were actually keeping pucks out of their own net. Okay, let's see here. Question number 15 from Brian. Do you see Amanda Kessel having a GM role one day given her promotion? And also, is she the best Kessel?
Is she the best Kessel? Well, I mean, given her Olympic successes, I guess you could make the argument there. I mean, it's tough because Phil Kessel, when he was traded here, he immediately became my favorite player. And then when they won the Stanley Cup and he became immortalized with that picture with the hot dogs and the cup, just shoving it back into the Toronto media faces. I mean, it was the cherry on top of the icing on top of the cake, as far as I'm concerned. But looking at Kessel, I mean, seeing the recent promotion she got in the Penguins front office, I don't believe there's a female general manager in the NHL at this point. I think eventually that barrier will be broken, and broken for good reason, because I think it should be broken. I think it should be broken in a lot of sports. I mean, I know sport has been traditionally dominated by men, but I don't see any reason why a player with as much Olympic and hockey experience and the wealth of knowledge like Amanda Kessel has, I don't see why she shouldn't or wouldn't be trusted in an executive role like that, making decisions. Maybe that's part of the reason why she continues to progress up the ladder in the Penguin system. Maybe that's something she wants to do in the future. Maybe if not in the NHL level or in whatever women's hockey league, if she decides to go the executive route in a women's hockey league instead of the NHL, you know, maybe she could help out with the United States women's national team and continue to lend her knowledge and expertise in that field as well. So, I mean, really, whatever Kessel wants to do, she's going to be instantly recognizable for it because of her successes on the ice and the way she continues to build her career off the ice in these various executive and administrative roles is incredibly impressive as well. So hopefully, maybe one day, it would be pretty wild and pretty awesome to see Amanda Kessel as the GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins, considering what the successes that her brother had on the ice during his playing career. So maybe one day down the line, that'll be cool to see if it actually happens. But for now, with Amanda trying to continue to develop her executive knowledge and executive and administrative expertise, maybe one day, yeah, definitely, it could be in the cards.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Question number 16. This might be my favorite question this week in the mailbag, because I don't think we touched on it a lot when we were breaking down the Carlson trade. Question number 16 from Brian goes to Robbie. I'm not seeing a lot of people talk about how the Carlson trade helps Evgeny Malkin. Malkin now has a chance to play with a legit number one defenseman in either Letang or now Carlson, and Crosby will get either one of Letang or Carlson as well.
Yeah, that's an incredible, a very good question. And when you think about it, is obviously something that could be a huge boost for not only Malkin and Crosby, but also obviously the team as well, then, because you're taking, again, Malkin, again, never played with, at least consistently, Letang generally played with Crosby. I mean, depending on who, injuries and stuff. But, I mean, for the most part, he's going to get one or the other, and Crosby will get one or the other. And between those two guys, they're going to be on the ice for roughly 45 to 50 minutes a night. That is pretty insane. And not only does that help Crosby and Malkin, it's also going to help the bottom six as well, especially when it can – come to scoring. But as for Malkin, maybe there's a little fear of putting Malkin and Carlson or Malkin and Letang on the ice at the same time from a defensive perspective. But that's why Ryan Graves and Marcus Pedersen exist to help fill in some of those weak spots. But Malkin, I think it only helps Malkin, because either way, he's going to play with a elite puck moving defenseman that's going to help get the puck out of the zone, push the puck up ice and into the offensive zone, where Malkin's going to be the most effective, obviously. So it's going to be very interesting to see exactly how it all works out, how the pairings work out with the forwards on the ice. But I think Malkin and Crosby have to be absolutely salivating over this move, because there is now ample opportunity to have two elite puck moving defensemen. That is going to completely change how that offense works. And we haven't even got into talking about the power play yet. We'll save that for another time. But I think overall, when looking at this from a Malkin perspective, it's going to be a completely different way of playing for him now that he has a guy that can move the puck like Carlson. I'm super excited for it. I think everybody should be excited for that, because if you got a guy like Carlson feeding you, Malkin, I mean, he put up 82 points last year in 82 games. I don't see why he can't meet that or exceed that again. And from a Carlson standpoint, Carlson put up 100 points with basically what, the best player with maybe Logan Couture or Timo Meier until he was traded. Now, every time Carlson's going to step on the ice, there's a chance that he's out there with either Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin. They're the two best players he's ever played with. And, I mean, the options, just thinking about it, is just gets me so excited. So I'm really excited to see how this all pans out once the season starts. Question number 17, again from Brian here. If you could only eat one style of food, what would it be?
Oh, man. So I get another food question here. I better be careful. I'm already on thin ice with these guys.
You better choose your words carefully, son, because if last week taught me anything, it's that you are on thinner ice than you think you are. So really, shame on Brian for including this. And you, so I'm going to mute myself now, but you better watch what you say before you went, this may be the last podcast you ever appear on.
Yeah, these food questions are going to get me just completely kicked off this podcast. Anyways, so I would probably have to say Indian food, Indian or like Thai food.
I mean, that's good food. I mean, okay. I won't lie. It's good.
I agree. So I'll let you go for this time. I like Indian food.
Whew, I'm actually like sweating a little bit. Okay. Nah, so
yeah, that's, yeah. I mean, that's, can't even argue that.
Indian food, so many like rich and distinct flavors. For me personally, most dishes don't need to be altered to be veganized. I like to really punish myself with excessive spice, and that's fairly customary with Indian food. I gotta say though, Italian is like right there, like right there. But I mean, I love bread and I love pasta, but I've got to be totally transparent. I have like a bit of a gluten intolerance. So when I eat a lot of bread and pasta, like I sincerely pay for it.
You only live once.
You only live once. And that's what I tell myself as I scarf down whatever pasta or bread dish that I'm eating. And it's a little bit, sometimes you got to really go out of your way to veganize some of that stuff, which is like, I mean, it's neither here nor there. It's like, it's delicious no matter what. So I would really like to open this up to Garrett and Robbie, because I think these food questions, they can't just be for me. I've been very disappointing when it comes to these food questions, and I'd like to hear and judge what styles of food they would eat.
Robbie, do you want to go first?
Yeah. I mean, I like all food. Basically, there's maybe five things that I'm a strict hardline no on, but if I had to pick one, I'd have to go the Italian route. I love pasta, love bread, pizza. I just feel like not that Indian food or Thai food doesn't have the spread. I just feel like the spread for Italian food is much larger. I mean, you can mix up sauces, pasta types. It doesn't even have to be just pasta all the time. You can have really good Italian food that is just meat, basically. Or vegetables, or there's just so many variations. But I'm a huge fan of Italian food. I love spaghettis, pizza, tiramisu, lasagna, you name it, strombolis. Now that's more of an American Italian, but neither here nor there. But I like people sleep on Indian food and Thai food a little bit too much. I don't have an abundance of options where I live, but there are one or two places that cook up pretty solid variations of Indian food that I love to hit them up every once in a while just to kind of fill a need. But I can eat pasta about four or five days a week. Or Italian food. Sorry, I could vary it, but Italian and Mexicans in there as well. But if I had to pick just one, like the question asked, it's Italian for me.
Yeah, I agree with Robbie. I have a good Mexican place and I have a good Chinese place down the road from where I live, which is nice because I like both of those food groups. But for me, basically take everything Robbie just said and just accept it as my answer, because I absolutely love pizza. I could eat pizza every day for 365 days a year and not get tired of it. I mean, that's just how much I love it. Pizza, pasta, but the pasta has to be with meat sauce, because I'm a stickler when it comes to pasta and it doesn't have meat sauce. Sometimes I will eat rigatoni without meat sauce, but like angel hair, I will not eat angel hair without a meat sauce. I need some different textures in my pasta. But yes, basically everything that Robbie said regarding Italian food, I will take as my answer and adopt it as well. I love Italian food. Basically, carbs. Italian food, I've come to realize, I don't know how Italians aren't like massively overweight, or maybe they are and I just don't know, because
just walk everywhere.
That's, you know what? That's true. That has to be it, because
and all their food's like
healthy and homegrown.
Yes. Like literally picked out of the garden. I studied abroad in Rome.
Oh, that's awesome.
In college. So one, the walking is no joke. Like, you might get on like a tram to get into the city center if you live slightly out. I wouldn't say I lived in Rome, but like one of the farther out districts. So I took like a 5-minute tram ride to get right into the city center. And then you literally walk. It's one of the more walkable European cities. So we walked, unless it was a significantly long hike, we would walk basically anywhere. And all the food we bought, we would buy our food every day. Our dinner, we'd stop on the way home from classes, buy what we wanted for dinner and eat it. And it was basically all fresh. Not saying that now, if like your pasta aisle at home is very similar to their pasta. They have the Berea, the I can't think of the other brand. It's a red box, but they have like their standard. They don't hand roll their pasta every night for dinner. But the sauces are all basically, you could buy them homemade like that day of, and we would just use tomatoes, maybe a little bit of meat and some cheese, garlic, basil and pepper, salt. And that was basically it. But as much as the fresh ingredients help, they walk literally everywhere. But I will say, if you're ever over there, the McDonald's in Italy slaps hard.
Oh no.
It slaps hard. We were like, we got to try it. And it was legitimately excellent, excellent McDonald's. Way better. You didn't feel like complete garbage after eating.
Yes. Like that. Yes. I know exactly what that means, what that feels like.
Yeah.
So if you're ever in Europe, make sure you find the Golden Arches.
Yes. You will not feel like total crap after eating foreign McDonald's.
I'm going to do this quickly. I'm going to shoot from the hip here for a second, just because we all had Italian food up there. And I heard you guys say pizza specifically. I just really want to go, what are your go-to toppings for a pizza?
I'm basic as hell. Pepperoni and sausage.
I like sausage. If I can have a customizable pizza, barbecue chicken.
Customizable. I love buffalo chicken pizza.
I'm not big on buffalo. My stomach can't really handle hot sauce. Yeah, but I mean, honestly, if you're thinking of customizable pizzas, you'd have to make the argument that buffalo chicken might be the winner in that category for like what's the most popular deluxe kind of pizza in America, and it probably is buffalo chicken.
That or like, I mean, are we counting like meat lovers as like a deluxe?
I mean,
if you're throwing like ham, bacon, sausage, pepperoni, Canadian bacon, whatever, I think that's probably your number one. But your number two is definitely probably barbecue chicken, just because, I mean, I'm not, barbecue sauce is hit or miss for me. I don't like it. I don't like things very sweet. But most barbecue chicken pizzas I've had have been exemplary, and I would eat them anytime.
The barbecue or the buffalo chicken pizza, there's a pizzeria out here. It's the oldest vegan pizzeria in the country, Pie Pizza, shout out. They introduced me to their version of a buffalo chicken and a barbecue chicken pizza, and it slaps. If I'm not going customizable, it's pineapple, jalapenos, black olives.
Come on!
You know,
what are
you
doing here?
You know,
just because you live closer to Hawaii doesn't mean you need...
we were so close. We were so close to having a really pure, issue-free podcast. And on one of the final questions of this mailbag, it's becoming a recurring thing. Of course he has to go. And of course he has to ruin it. He has to ruin it with one of his terrible food takes.
I have had pineapple on pizza. It was pineapple and ham. And it wasn't like, it's just not. Do you ever have one of those things where you know sweet doesn't belong?
Yes.
That is like, again, it wasn't awful. Like I ate it. Like I didn't get like, I wasn't repulsed by it. And like, if necessary, I would eat it. Like it wouldn't kill me. It's just, it's one of those things where sweet doesn't belong. And I'm just not, it's not a go-to bite. Like, any means to me, like absolutely not.
Oh well, I have to get that little sweet little spice on a slice. It's great. We'll move on. Thank you for entertaining.
What else
that,
did you
boys.
Say about what else did you say with pineapple?
Pineapple, jalapenos, and black olives.
Oh see, my god, that's
now jalapenos.
Awful.
I could because like jalapenos, I like. I cannot do olives and like. Regular or on anything, I am strictly anti-olive.
You put all three of those things on a pizza at the same time?
Oh yeah, the holy trinity: brine, salt, or brine, sweet, and spice.
That's way too much there. I just don't like olives.
You guys don't like olives? Nah. Every time. If it's not a, like I mentioned, a barbecue chicken type of pizza.
So taking bets on what Snail will say next week that will make me throw my headset.
We really should start taking bets, honestly, because I was so proud of the fact that we were about to get through this podcast without him giving a terrible food take. I mean, the fact that I think it's what, 2 or 3 weeks in a row now that he's come out and really just desecrated all over this podcast with whatever abomination he declares as pizza. I mean, we're going to move on to the next question now. Snail will read the next question. I think it goes to me because I just have to get my head straight. You know, I thought we were out of the woods, but very clearly we are not.
Yeah, currently holding an Iron Man streak here of just horrible takes. Anyways, we'll move on to question number 18. And this is coming from Justice97. Hi from Copenhagen. I have two boys who play for the same club, Rodover.
I guess.
I'm sorry if I'm butchering that. Let's just say Rodover, as Lars Ellers did in junior. How do you see Lars Eller? Is he in the third or fourth line as a center, and what can he bring to the team compared to last year's third and fourth line centers? Cheers from Rodover.
Okay, so I was very curious about this question. I believe, now I'm an American and I could be butchering this, I believe it's pronounced something like Oyo, like Oyo or something, because I looked at the pronunciation guide for this city. It's Oyo or Oyo. It's a very weird, the R is like in the back of the throat, and that's how you pronounce it. Anyway, there's a couple of things with this question asker here, because he's a new question asker. Not only is he from Denmark, which I think is absolutely incredible that we have someone asking a question to us from Denmark, he's also a Liverpool fan, because I looked at that. I looked at that YNWA, You Never Walk Alone, and I was copying the questions over to the outline for this mailbag. So he's a Liverpool fan living in Denmark, asking a question about the Pittsburgh Penguins to a bunch of Americans, which I think is just absolutely incredible. But I don't want,
baby.
I guess I can't believe we are international, which just shocks me. But talking about the question here and talking about Lars Eller, I believe Kyle Dubas went on record and he openly praised Lars Eller. And I wouldn't be surprised if Lars Eller starts out as the third line center and that responsibility gets taken away from Jeff Carter compared to last season. I'm pretty sure that's what Kyle Dubas signed Lars Eller to be, the team's third line center. Now, where does that leave Jeff Carter? Maybe fourth line center. Kyle Dubas signed a bunch of, you know, defensively responsible bottom six players. So there could be a competition for third line center, fourth line center. How does the fourth line get rounded out with a couple of different forwards? Does Jeff Carter belong on the fourth line? Does he earn a fourth line right wing spot? You know, I think all of that is going to be determined in training camp and preseason. But what will Lars Eller bring to the team? He'll score you the odd goal here and there, but it's not going to be offense. You're not relying on Lars Eller to bring you offense. And that's, I think, again, that's part of the reason when Dubas was constructing this roster, he knew he had the offense in the top six. And you could make the argument that you need offense on all four lines, but he very clearly and obviously went out to construct that bottom six in a more defensive-centric kind of way, bringing in a lot of defensively responsible forwards. So Eller, even at age 34, in the back end of his career, he'll pot you the odd goal here and there. He's not completely inept offensively, but I think you're going to see more of an emphasis of that bottom six being on defense, and Lars Eller will definitely be leading the charge in that bottom six. So question number 19, again, comes from Justice97, the Liverpool fan from Copenhagen, Denmark. Robbie, where do you see Carlson in this lineup? Is he on the first defensive pair or the second defensive pair? And how about the power play? Where does Carlson fit on the power play? Can you see the Penguins playing with Carlson and Letang together on the same unit, so we have two defensemen on our first unit? And if that is the case, if we have two defensemen on power play one, who will be out there with them?
So I think just in the regular lineup, I think he's the second pairing defenseman alongside Marcus Pedersen. I really think, again, I think you could swap Ryan Graves and Marcus Pedersen, and I think they will at some point during the season just to try something different. But I think the season will start with Letang and Ryan Graves on the top pairing, and then Carlson is your second line. You're basically, though, at this point with Carlson there, I think you basically have a 1A pairing, a 1B pairing, and then a third pairing. And if your third pairing is Pierre-Olivier Joseph / Ty Smith and Chad Ruedel or Mark Friedman, I'll take that every day of the week and twice on Sunday, to be honest. If we really want to go sicko mode, I think we see – I mean, we always talk about the two-headed monster with Crosby and Malkin. Imagine, like, a four-headed monster with Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Carlson, and then a guy that scored 30 or 40 goals, and Jake Guentzel or Ricard Raquel. And I think to start the season without Guentzel, that's your top power play unit. How exactly you set up the three forwards, I don't know. But you're going to have Carlson and Letang basically feeding. You could feed bombs to Malkin. Letang obviously has a bomb. Carlson has just a disgusting shot. He's more of a wrist shot guy than a slap shot guy. Crosby obviously put him closer to the net. Have Carlson Letang feed passes toward the net for the deflection. And then obviously Raquel in that Phil Kessel spot to whip slappers or wind up a wrister and try to pick a corner. I think, yeah, to start the year, that power play looks lethal with those five. It's obviously you wonder if there's a too many cooks situation that could cause some problems, but I think those guys are smart enough to figure it out. And then when Guentzel comes back, it depends on what the chemistry is with that top unit when Guentzel comes back. It's really hard to be like, oh, we're going to put our 40-goal scorer on the second unit, but that's a good problem to have. And then maybe you have P.O. Joseph running that power play with maybe a Pedersen or Graves type guy there just for some insurance on that second power play unit. And we haven't even talked about Brian Rust at this point, so Carlson really opens up a ton of options on the power play and what to do. But I think to start, you run those five out and try to play some Globetrotters hockey with the man advantage and see where it goes. I mean, you have three guys there on the ice at any time that have scored 100 points in a season in their career at least once. So a good problem to have, but very excited to see how it all comes together. Customer 20, this is from Noah Jordan. Garrett, maybe you remember if he's asked before. If I do not recall Noah asking a question, so Noah, welcome to the mailbag. We're just talked about how the top of the lineup will look. So Snail, give us a little preview of how you think the bottom six will look when the Penguins take the ice.
Nothing really out of the ordinary here. I would say my only hot take is to start the season, I believe that Drew O'Connor is not going to be a bottom six guy. I think he's going to be a top six guy. I think third line is going to consist of Eller, and he's going to be flanked by, I think there's some internal competition here. I think that on his right side, you could have Nylander or Vinny Hinostroza. And then on his left side, I'm assuming Pitlick. Did a little bit more research on him lately, and I think this guy could be a sneaky, solid little player for us in the bottom six. I wouldn't be surprised if he's on the left side there on the third line. And then our fourth line, I think it's going to be Achari flanked by Nieto and Carter. I mean, I think Carter is going to... I think last year it was a tough year for him, and he definitely was the whipping boy in Pittsburgh, and I could see him being invigorated and come to camp in shape. And you know, I think he's going to have to earn playing time. Like, he's not going to be just out there by default at all this season. I think there's a lot of internal competition on this roster right now looking for ice time. And I think Carter's going to be motivated to make the most out of this season and earn his ice time. So that's how I see it. Eller, and then Nylander, Hinostroza, and Pitlick on the third and fourth line, Achari, Nieto, and Carter. Okay, let's see. This is a question from Justice97 again. Can you see us making another big trade? If yes, what would we trade for? A winger, center, or maybe a goalie? And who could you see us getting in each of those positions?
I think the big trade was Erik Karlsson, and that was that. I don't think there's going to be another big trade like that magnitude, just because there's no player like that available anymore. The Penguins got their man, and their man just so happened to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest name on the trade market at this time. So not to sound like a downer or give a super bland answer to a question talking about trades, but if we were going to make a trade at this point, given Jake Guentzel's injury, and we don't know, we know he's going to be reevaluated in 12 weeks or so. If the Penguins do make another trade, I would imagine it would be for a winger, maybe to help alleviate some of the struggle on the left side for Crosby, to have another top six-esque winger. If Riley Smith doesn't work out alongside Crosby, you put Riley Smith with Gino on that second line. And, you know, maybe if you don't, you know, experiment internally, I know Snail said earlier, Drew O'Connor could be an option in the top six, signing a new contract. But if the Penguins go out and make a trade, I couldn't give you specific names. I don't know. Outside of Erik Karlsson, that was the big fish that everyone was watching this summer to see where he would be traded. And in terms of forwards, big forwards on the trade market, I can't give you names, because really, I don't think there are too many big names at this point. If we get into November, December, January, closer to the trade deadline for this season, you know, then we might have a clearer picture of who might be on the market if the Penguins need that sort of boost at that time. But for right now, the roster that the Penguins have right now is the roster they're probably going to carry into training camp, preseason, and probably the start, the early portion of the regular season. So the Karlsson trade might have been the last big gunshot that that Kyle Dubas and his staff put together. They got their man. And now, for the most part, the roster is put together, and now we just have to see it all come together on the ice instead of just hypothetically talking about it. All right, question number 22, the last question this week, comes from Woody. Robbie, you get the final question this week. Can you believe Kyle Dubas pulled off the Erik Karlsson trade with no buyouts? Simply amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. Basically, the buyout was the trade, without any lasting repercussions down the line. A work of art, basically, in terms of putting that deal together. And there's a meme that has always gone around, especially the last couple of years, like, well, why don't we just trade all of our bad players for their good players? And that's basically what Kyle Dubas did. I mean, again, I have nothing against Jeff Petrie. I thought he was fine, but obviously didn't bring you what Erik Karlsson does. Again, that's business, man. That's business. Mike Mikael Granlund, just thankful that is gone. That headache is no longer, and he got rid of him without having to do the buyout, which, you know, he wanted to avoid. But it definitely seems like that it was heading in that direction. If that trade doesn't get done, that the buyout was going to happen. So good to get some value, I guess you could say. And to give away basically a first round pick, a protected first round pick, next year. So if the Penguins do struggle this year, that pick, is at least, protected. Again, next year's draft, I don't think is quite as showy as this year's draft. So, but again, and a name that we haven't talked about, at least I don't think so, unless I missed it, was Rem Pitlick, who came over from Montreal, who could very well end up being a factor in that bottom six come come this season, come October when the season starts. So, I mean, overall, A-plus job. And again, it's really nice to see everybody was basically giving the Penguins an A for the trade. Like, wherever you looked, you know, I said it's risky, but hey, the last regime took no risks. And it's just nice. It's so refreshing to hear Kyle Dubas talk with, like, just a plan. He could have came out and said that we're going to try to win games this year, and that would have been a step up from what the Hextall plan was, because we still don't know what that plan was, because we can't get inside his head to see it. And, yeah, it's just very refreshing to have someone that's willing to take risks. I said on, I believe it was, the first question, just the overall apathy of the last regime to do nothing. And then to have them come in now, have Kyle Dubas come in now and make trades like this that actually are not just to, like, fill roles, but to actually make this team significantly better. I look at it now and I'm like, everybody's like, well, maybe they're the fourth best team in the division. This is a damn good hockey team right now. Again, lots of questions about the goaltending situation, and maybe a healthy Jari answers those questions. I don't know. But you're going to have a legitimate Hall of Fame defender on the ice between 40 and 50 minutes a night. That is insane. That is combined with two other Hall of Famers already on the roster. It's a very good feeling to have right now if you're a Penguins fan. And, they were getting dunked on, and it was Jay Fresh that kind of said, like, after the trade was made, like, all these fans from other teams saying it's a bad trade or Carlson's too old don't really understand, like, the moment of zen the Penguins fans are currently in right now after everything we went through. Again, so incredibly spoiled, don't get me wrong, but it feels really good to be a Penguins fan right now. And I didn't even feel – this isn't the worst I've ever felt about the Penguins during the Crosby and Malkin era, but – or back at the end of the season, but it was probably the least I cared about. It was more just like a bleh feeling. Back when they had Mike Johnson, when I was like, man, they might blow all this up and it might never live up to the hype that it was supposed to. But now it's just a very nice place to be. And Kyle Dubas, thank you, man, because it feels good right now.
Robbie, if nothing else, the Penguins will be entertaining to watch. I mean,
listen, if you got to win every game 6-5, if you have more goals than the other team, that's the whole goal. Now, was that going to work in April? Probably not. But man, let's go out and have fun, because listen, we know we're at the end of this era.
Exactly. Window,
this may have propped it open for an extra year or two. Let's just go have some fun.
Like, I think that's going to be a thing that, and the first time that the Penguins go on a losing streak with these players, you're going to see comments from boomers and on their Facebook comments and say, I knew trading for Carlson wasn't going to work, or something along those lines. Too many superstars and not enough grit, not enough heart, not enough whatever. The Penguins don't, in my estimation, in my opinion, the Penguins don't have to win a damn thing for the rest of the time Crosby and Malkin are on this roster. They already solidified their legacies as the best players to ever put on a Penguins uniform, and they already solidified their legacies. They're going to be first ballot Hall of Famers. They're two of the greatest players to ever play this game, and we've had the luxury of watching them for almost 20 years at this point. If they don't win another championship, then I am going to sleep soundly at night. But you know also why I'm going to sleep soundly at night? Because Kyle Dubas took a risk. And that's something that Ron Hextall and his staff did not do. You know, with the last general manager that took risks? Jim Rutherford. Yeah. You could definitely argue that the end of Rutherford's tenure was less than ideal. And, you know, I'm still not over trading away a first-round pick for Ryan Reeves after they won in 2017. But he still took risks. He was not afraid to be that gunslinger that he built his reputation becoming. You know Jim Rutherford as a gunslinger GM. He's not going to sit on his hands and wait like Ron Hextall did. If the Penguins are bad, at least they're going to be entertaining while they're bad. And I don't even think they're going to be that bad. I think they're going to be competitive because I know the captain of that hockey team. Sidney Crosby wants another Stanley Cup. He will take three straight Stanley Cups from age 36, 37, 38, 39, 40. He could take five straight Stanley Cups and retire, and he would still be determined to win more because that's the kind of player he is. The Penguins could be terrible for the next 3 years, and I wouldn't care because the legacy of this core is already solidified. They won their championships. Anything on top of this is just extra gravy as far as I'm concerned. So the Carlson contract may age badly, but at least in the short term, the Penguins are going to be fun as hell to watch on the ice. Robbie, you said globetrotter hockey. That's the best description that the next 2, 3, 4 years can be while we wind down, because I would rather watch globetrotter hockey than the hockey that we had to sit through the last 2 years.
That's fair. I don't think the Carlson contract will age any worse than the Peachy contract. Or, I mean, Granlund was, he had 2 years left, but I think he's on a better contract given what he produces, in terms of what he produces as compared to Mikael Granlund and Jeff Carter, or Jeff Petrie. Yeah.
Alrighty. We got through another massive mailbag, but it was a mailbag that I knew it was going to be big because we have a lot to talk about. We're still going to have a lot to talk about as we get closer to training camp, as we get closer to preseason, as we get closer to the first puck drop between the Penguins and the Chicago Blackhawks come mid-October. But for now, for Snail, for Robbie Noggle, I have been Gareth Behanna. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Penscast Mailbag, and we will talk to all of you again this time next week.